If you're an RIA, Schwab Advisor Services is the Watson to your homes. Smart, dependable, always has your back. With all the wealth services, technology, and support your firm needs, the difference is so obvious, it's Schwabvious. Follow the clues at schwabvious.com.
Welcome to Eltel and John's La Liga Weekly. Hooray! We got the European Super League shelved, for now at least. On another note, I would like to apologise to all the Barca, Real Madrid and Atleti fans for getting the European Super League shelved, for now at least. Think of it this way. Your drunken mate rings you up telling you he's got another tip for the horses, and this time it's a sure thing. This will definitely sort out his money problems. Can you just lend him 500 quid? Anyway, who cares about stupid old La Liga? Real Madrid and Barcelona probably won 8-0, did they? No, actually, they didn't. Los Blancos drew 0-0 again. Maybe Zidane is trying to educate all of those 18 to 24-year-olds on the character-building qualities of a good goalless draw. Atletico Madrid of the European elite were beaten by Athletic Club, who somehow are able to kick a ball around without any Germans or Brazilians or Italians. Amazing what you can do when you put your mind to it. So Barca are the favourites, I guess, although let's not discount Unsuper Sevilla, who've claimed 22 points from the last 24 available. Yes, we have a four-way title race with a proper relegation battle thrown in for good measure. Yes, a relegation battle when the stakes are high. The games are interesting. It's probably all a fix anyway. You know, UEFA hired a load of actors to play the part of angry Chelsea fans outside Stamford Bridge. I don't know why we're always surprised when billionaires are useless. It's like we didn't take anything from the James Bond film that we all watched. If one bloke with a gun and some exploding cufflinks can derail an evil plot, then we shouldn't be astonished that a European Super League would launch with a building magnate rambling incoherently on Spanish television. We will be looking at everything that happened in boring old La Liga this weekend, with its battles all the way through the league. Terry, speaking of... conspiracy theories, of course. How was your second jab?
I have to be honest, I sailed through the first one. Yeah. I had the second one this Saturday. And it wasn't until late in the evening that I suddenly developed the pain in the arm where the jab went in. And then through the night, it was horrendous. I think I suffered every side effect you possibly can get, which of course meant I didn't sleep at all. Headache, joint aches, muscle aches, and pleasantly surprised when I did get up in Sunday morning that it turned into an upset tummy as well. So every cloud and that, I lost 3 pounds in 5 hours. So I think that tells the listeners what you were. Perhaps there was an unexpected side effect, and it was a pleasant bonus for someone who's always watching what they eat, watching what they weigh. So straight out today to get a jam, roly-poly and custard and pull it all back on.
Well, well done for getting there. Yeah, for being protected. But there we are. A little bit of warning, everyone.
Allegedly, if you do get those side effects, every injury I've had came back during that night trying to sleep. And it said any weak joints, any muscle weak, you know, injuries to muscles, the pain will become worse. And they did. So I was a mess, to be perfectly honest. But as I say, I went through it for about 12 hours. So interesting.
So a warning.
And allegedly, if it takes effect like that, it's the actual vaccination is becoming effective. I had to Google the one where you had an upset tummy because I hadn't heard or read about that at all. But that is the case that the Pfizer jab can cause that. Another jab can cause nausea.
So did you have the Pfizer?
Yes, I did, yes. Right, okay. Yeah. you're leaving me hanging there, John. That's all. Okay, good luck.
Because I had the AstraZeneca, I think. I think the Oxford one is the AstraZeneca.
My wife had AstraZeneca as well.
Yeah. Okay, there we are. Unexpected. So,
thanks for the NHS. Went smoothly when I went there. Incredible amount of people. And it was run so well. So it was at Stansted, not the airport, the village, the town. And so thanks to them, despite what I went through in the 24 hours after. More than happy to have had it.
Yeah, There we are. Right, let's talk a little bit of European
Excuse
Super
me, John,
League.
I just got guns in the loop.
Warning to all ex-footballers about having his second vaccine.
Yeah.
Super League, right, patreon.com/LTEL, by the way, if you want to help us along with the podcast and help fund the podcast. And Tintin is one of our latest. He sent a long message, but the... for which he apologised. I don't apologise. I'm happy to read you, or always read your long messages from the Patreon. But the people who've got away without too much of a slagging off in this business are the agents and the super agents, who I think he makes a very, very, very good point that the inflation that we've seen in prices, in wages at the top end of the game that has caused this eye-watering amount of debt. I've got the figure. It's £1.2 million, UK pounds, increase in wages among those 12 clubs in the last 5 years, when revenues have not been rising anywhere near that kind of level. And the agents have played a part. It's a very good point. Martin, another one of our Patreons, lives in Madrid, is an Atleti fan, and he says, disappointed Atleti fans, Spanish fans in general, 80% of the footy fans he talks to in Madrid want a European Super League. They don't care that much about La Liga, no protests, nothing. So disappointing. So yeah, it is. It's very different, isn't it? In you know, from Spain to England, and I was saying this to the Patreons of the day. I'm not a chest thumping English football fan who thinks everything's better in the Premier League, but I do think the English reaction has been the right one, and I think
appropriate.
Yeah, yeah.
I think so. I think in Spain we have an issue with the two big clubs. Let's take them, for instance, Real Madrid and Barcelona. The supporters are almost, particularly with Real Madrid, disciples, aren't they now, of Florentino Perez? Because their president is never challenged anymore. He's made that increasingly difficult, almost impossible to challenge him in an election. I think the Barcelona supporters were glad to have Joan Laporta back after the previous president. And it's almost like they hang on every word that they say. And it's strange that those two clubs are not owned by those two individuals. You know, they're members, they're owned by socios, the supporters. So it's quite bizarre that they, you know, act in that manner. According to Barcelona and Real Madrid, the Super League is still on, which yeah. is, you know, we clearly know it isn't. There must be a motive for them to you know, as if to say, well, we've kept to our word. So I imagine it's a financial motive that the clubs that signed the contracts, who now want to pull out, I imagine that Real Madrid and Barcelona are anticipating, hoping there will be penalties and punishments, and they might be the recipients of a financial advantage.
Yeah.
By saying, well, look, you know, you all joined it, you all signed the contracts, we're the only two still in it, we haven't pulled out. So the financial punishments, which I'm led to believe there are, might end up in the coffers of Barcelona and Real Madrid, because clearly it's not going to happen at the moment.
No, not for a long time.
Every other club has pulled out.
Yeah,
including Atletico Madrid.
Yeah, but the reaction in England was so strong, so vociferous. They were real people outside. You know, real people invaded the Manchester United training ground. They're not going back there. The English clubs are not going back there anytime soon. And they haven't got the same incentive anyway, have they? Because the Premier League TV money is worth more. I mean, they're all massively in debt because what? they're addicted gamblers, aren't they? These people who run football clubs.
Yeah.
They just spend
the same will happen again in this Super League, European Super League. If it went through, they would still spend everything they've got.
Yeah, because they say
and occasionally spend £300 million on a player that doesn't work out and have to flog him for 20.
Because they
will still make the same mistakes.
There's a 55% cap on wages to revenue, but that wouldn't work because the reason that financial fair play is struggling to work. Now, I think FFP has had a good effect on football personally, but it's struggling to be consistently applied because of the clubs. Because the clubs are paying lawyers to fight everything.
Yeah.
So why would that not? Why would we not instantly be embroiled in that in a European
Super League? It'd be an unregulated league anyway. So who's going to regulate it?
Yeah.
Not FIFA, not UEFA.
The clubs.
Florentino Perez.
Yeah. And then they'd start.
Because he was going to be president.
And start suing each other almost straight away.
Do you know what the ironic thing was? Despite this Super League of 12, 15 clubs, whatever it was going to be, Barcelona and Real Madrid were still dominant. because they were still getting more money than the others. So you have this little group of super clubs. You would imagine they would all think we're all the same, we're all equal, we're all super clubs. They're not, but of course, but they think that. And then they still, Real Madrid and Barcelona were still going to get more money than the other clubs.
They're still getting
so that starts off straight away on the wrong foot, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That you have this new league you're coming up with. Oh, but we want more money than you lot. So further down the line, there'd be a breakup in the Super League. From if it got to 15-20, the top eight would want to pull away from the rest and pull the ladder up because they don't want to share that money with anyone. And then it would go down to four. And we'd end up with like four teams traveling around the world, playing exhibition games and hoping that billions of people are going to watch, you know, across the world to see. Yeah. I'm not even going to pick the four. But that's it. But they're all, someone will always want more than someone else. Someone always wants more than their share, fair share. And that's the case with this. That's what it all boils down to.
Yeah, Barcelona and Real Madrid playing Clásicos on the moon is the the eventual fate of football every day. Anyway,
building new stadiums up there, their own ones.
Let's talk about the football, because you know what? La Liga is really, really interesting. You know, we've got this brilliant title race, a four-way title race, because Sevilla, I keep forgetting to include Sevilla in the title race, but they're obviously in there, aren't they? They've won five games in a row. They've won seven out of their last eight without being brilliant, but they just keep getting results. And 2-1 at the weekend against Granada. And, you know, it can be done.
Yeah, I think I'm looking around the Europe, to be honest, in terms of who is playing brilliant. And unsurprisingly, I have to say, nobody really is, because of the nature of this season. It is a slog. It's endurance. It's about who's fit, who's available, it's about recovery time in games. So the fact that Sevilla keep getting results on there, and not only with the players that are playing, but the squad. I mean, there's the squad that Lopetegui and Monchi have built. When you look at the players that were on the bench at the weekend, the players that were missing, the players that came off the bench, there was, you know, just to show the quality. And I think that's what we're getting now from not just La Liga, but, you know, all the leagues around Europe, that the quality might not be there, but it's all about endurance, because, you know, what the players have had to go through this season, playing a significant amount of games in a season that's 2 months shorter. I think we're now seeing, you know, those teams, all those usual adjectives, those that want it more, we're seeing that, you know, who's got that desire, who's willing to go the extra yards when they're knackered and tired, and who's, you know, who's willing to push the most. So I think, you know, hats off to Sevilla. I didn't think they had a chance, but they definitely have now.
Yeah. Real Madrid 0 against Betis. For the purposes of Patreons, I've turned off my camera because I think it was my internet connection was a little bit unstable there. So you can see my book, everybody.
I did wonder when I was talking there with you, Gordon. I'm talking to myself.
I haven't plugged the book for a while. So there it is. It's the 50 Football's Most Influential Players by John Driscoll. Give it a read. It's good. You've got what you can see on your screen there, by the way, Terry, it's the early draft of the front of the artist's work, and it's the wrong Bosman on that. So the right, if you buy the book, you get the right Bosman who appears on it. So there we are. So anyway, by the by, let's talk about Real Madrid versus Betis. A couple of goalless draws for Real Madrid. I suppose everything applies, doesn't it? It's a slog, isn't it? And particular for Real Madrid, to be going still in Europe. It's hard work for them.
Yeah. Well, add the Liverpool 0-0 draw as well, away to Anfield. It's 3-0 draws in the last four games, and it has taken its toll on Real Madrid. There's no doubt about that. Unfortunately for Real Madrid, if Benzema doesn't score, there's not too many other players that are contributing. I did a little check-up on the goal-scoring partnerships, and Benzema, 21 goals. Casemiro's next with 5. So I think that says it all, that if, you know, it's the weight that Benzema is carrying on his shoulders, and he's been incredible. Might just be too much to see Real Madrid through to win another, to retain their La Liga title. So I think that's a big issue. And it's a lot to expect Benzema to every single game. He's picked up knocks. He's not always 100% recently. He picked up that heavy knock against James Milner. I'm not entirely convinced that he's 100% fit, but what are the options? So I think that the pleasing issue for Real Madrid was Zidane must be delighted with his team's attitude, because they're really up against it. and they're all the players are giving their all. Carl got some, you know, good playing time under his belt, and also the return of Eden Hazard. I mean, we know we can be critical of his outputs since joining Real Madrid, but there is still no doubt in his quality. And, you know, if he can get himself anywhere near back to his best, mentally, I think it's most importantly for him. I have no worries about the technical ability. So it'd be great to see him flourish in the last few weeks of La Liga and, of course, in the Champions League. So it's a slog. I mean, it's still going to be a slog. They've got two extra games against Chelsea at the very least. So Real Madrid are giving it their all. They're hanging on in there. I think that the draw against Betis probably, I don't know why I'm going to say this, but it possibly rules them out of winning the title. And looking at the games, remaining games to come, they've still got some tough games. It's just the sheer number of games to come. And it's going to be tough for them, I think, to retain the title. I probably will be 100% wrong, and Real Madrid will win the league title again. It's hard to put a prediction on who's going to win it from now on.
Atletico obviously suffered a massive blow, didn't they? Losing that game away to Athletic, having fought back to get back into it with Savic's goal 77 minutes. And then Inigo Martinez with a thumping header to wrap it up for Athletic. An Athletic club that we hadn't seen with that much fight in recent weeks, that they were up for it against Atletico. And, you know, La Liga delivering again. We thought that there were twists and turns to come in the title race, and, you know, and there we saw one.
You know what? It was a really much improved performance from Athletic Club.
Yeah.
And do you know why? It changed the players.
Right, yeah.
You know, he took over and he picked his formation, and I think it was good management. He wanted to get a plan in place and stick to a group of players, and it worked, didn't it? They won the Super Cup, they got to the Copa del Rey final, and it was, you know, they were going in the right direction. And it's now almost like he's looking ahead to next season, having lost both those cup finals. And when you saw the players at the weekend that were on the bench that have been playing, that normally been playing, and I thought they've tailed off just recently. But I understood why he stuck to that group of players he was picking week in, week out. But then at the weekend, you're seeing the likes of Sanset and Villalibre lead the attacking line. I thought they looked really bright. I mean, Musio, I think, he came in on the left and was excellent. Berenguer, who's been in and out of the team, he was good. So whenever they had a chance on the break, and the Kappa came back in at right back, he hasn't been playing a lot recently. We've seen Oscar DeMarcus playing there. So I think when you see the players that were given an opportunity, I thought they looked really good on the counter-attack. It looked promising for Athletic going forward, that suddenly, you know, Marcelino is looking at it. Instead of the 12, 13 players he was using every week, there's another 4, 5, 6 players that possibly can contribute in the future for Athletic Club. So it was a really tight game. And it was argued to, it was hard to argue with the fact that Athletic got all 3 points in the end. I think they carried a threat throughout the game. They got the first goal, of course, which was relatively early, which, you know, does shape the nature of the game. And then it was down to Atletico to try and break them down to get the goal. I thought they wasted another half, Atletico, in the first half, and maybe took too long in the second half to make changes. And then when the changes were made, you could argue with hindsight they weren't the right changes. So, you know, I think it was a difficult game for Atletico on paper. And it proved to be exactly that. It's not given you go to Athletic Club and win games of football. Far from it. So while it's a blow to Atletico, I think that the big issue was when they equalised with Savic, you then believe that they looked the stronger team and you thought they were going to be the ones to go on and win it. Then they mess up with, you know, defending from a set piece and allow Inigo Martinez to score with a thumping header. And a dramatic winner at the end of the game. And if Athletic Club, like a few other clubs in the league that we can talk about, that haven't got an awful lot to play for now, to see that joy and emotion and jubilation after they scored the win against Atletico. There was a few other teams in a similar position as well. Celta Vigo could be, you know, that case. You know, when they won their game, when they scored their goals, they're celebrating like they're still in the race for Europe, or, you know, trying to stay out of relegation battle. So it was refreshing to see that Athletic put so much into it, and they still like, you know, giving the Super League clubs a bloody nose now and then. And that's exactly what they did at the weekend. I was disappointed with Atletico in terms of the changes made by Simeone. And I thought it was just a couple of wasted changes. you know, taking Trippier off and changing your fullback and putting your Renzi back to right back, taking Angel Carrera off. I think it was, and Torreira come on as a replacement when you had Dembele on the bench. Maybe too long to bring Suarez and João Felix on. So it's the nature of this season is that at the moment you can't afford any slip ups at the top. Otherwise, it leads to problems.
And so the team that didn't slip up of the top three as we went into the weekend was Barca, of course, on a weekend in which we'd previewed it and said that there were points to be dropped all over the place. They didn't, even though they fell behind. Chukwueze, who's been in great form recently, and then a couple of goals from Griezmann and at the howler, of course, from your old mate Juan Foyt, your old Spurs mate Terry.
But you made him sound like an old teammate. That's
he looked like damning it.
On John. Yeah,
what is he? Mid-50s, is it? they did it, Barca, didn't they? You know, it was a very losable game, wasn't it, against a strong-looking Villarreal lineup.
Yep, and Villarreal down to 10 men for the last 25, and for the last 25 minutes was still really pushing for the equalising. But if I'm being honest, Barcelona at the end of the game were hanging on a little bit, similar to what we saw against Getafe. At the moment, I mean, they called them bipolar in the Spanish press, Barcelona, because in the same game, they're able to show moments of brilliance and then, you know, poor periods of play. So I don't think Barcelona are at their best, which follows on from what I'm saying earlier about the nature of La Liga and teams around big clubs around Europe. They're not at their best, but they needed someone different to step up. It was a Messi this weekend. It was Griezmann with an incredible first goal. Really difficult finish, that is. Don't underestimate how difficult that skill is, because he had to move his body around to get it on his left foot, because, as we know, he's left-footed, and then choose the right moment for that little half-volley dink over Sergio Asenjo. Bad defending from Villarreal in terms of they just scored and they switch off. It literally was a minute after, wasn't it, from the first play after Chukwueze gave them the lead. And then, of course, obviously, poor defending for the second one from Foyth, who loves concentration, thinks it's an easy pass back to the keeper, intercepted by Griezmann, rounded and finished it off. So when I was talking earlier about the goal scoring, you know, with Benzema, I mean, Griezmann, no one helping out Benzema. Griezmann's got 11 goals now. So it's 36 between him and Messi, which is a decent total for a strike partnership that's not always played together. And I think that it could be decisive if someone else at Barcelona is going to step up. I mean, we shouldn't underestimate what good player Griezmann has been. I think it's his 250th goal in La Liga at the weekend, or his 250th goal in La Liga, which is some going. It's not the standards of Messi and probably Luis Suarez, but for a player that has a little bit, you know, extra to his game in terms of playing wide, dropping deep and stuff like that, it's a fantastic goal return. He's playing well.
You know, credit to Griezmann, because in a way, it's easy to identify him as part of Barcelona's financial problems because they paid too much for him and they're overpaying him. But what he hasn't chucked the towel in, has he? You know, he's not Messi Ronaldo level, but he's a guy who his output in terms of playing, his physical output in terms of constantly playing games, is there, and he keeps on going. They paid too much money for him, but he's not a write-off, is he, Griezmann? He still keeps contributing. Yeah,
exactly. And at times, you know, I think he's got fantastic attitude. And I think at times that is to his detriment, because you see him chasing about all over the pitch. Sometimes I can feel myself shouting at the television, "You're not playing for Atletico Madrid anymore. You don't have to be left back." But that's where he goes. You know, he's constantly on the move. He does work extremely hard. He's an unselfish player as well. And he's contributing to what is, you know, second half of the season for Barcelona. He's becoming really important now. So, I mean, he should be. I mean, you made the point about him, they're overpaying him, but he is a quality player. So if they can, you know, get the best in the partnership between him and Messi in this new system that Barcelona are playing, they have Dembele on the bench if they need an alternative. But at the moment, it's Messi and Griezmann who seem to have a good little understanding going as well. And I think the relationship, you know, Messi giving Griezmann the penalty against Getafe when he could have taken it and got a hat-trick, says a little bit maybe that, you know, perhaps at this stage now, how long Griezmann has been at Barcelona, that he is more accepted, because there was a period of time, wasn't there, where I probably made the accusations. They were ignoring him. They weren't passing to him, not just Messi, but lots of the players. But that isn't the case now, and he's an integral part of how Barcelona are playing at the moment.
You mentioned that Villarreal were down to 10 players for the last, 25 minutes, half hour of the game. So Trigueros was sent off. I saw a bit of reaction on Twitter, which is always an interesting place to gather your views from, that described it as the worst ever challenge on Lionel Messi. You have a different view, Terry.
You can hear me. No, maybe it's a foul. But I was going to go on a rant, and I think you've teed it up for me, that we are becoming, it's becoming such a non-contact sport now. And my opinion on that tackle is, if Trigueros goes in with his studs up and catches Messi, yes, by all means, reckless, dangerous play, out of control. But it's instinctive play from a non-aggressive, non-violent player who's overrun the ball. And you see the angle of his boot when he makes contact with the ball. His foot is down. The studs are not showing. The issue here is that Messi, like a lot of players now, when they go in for that, what I would call 50-50 challenge, if you kind of pull out, you might put yourself at risk of injury, but it did not look bad in a slow motion replay. And I think Messi on this occasion, he tries to nick the ball, he tries to pinch it when he knows a challenge is coming in, and he gets injured. It's, you know, deemed to be a red card. I looked at the Granada goal that was disallowed against Sevilla. Yangel Herrera makes a jump at the far post over Marcus Acuna, knocks it down, Puerta scores. And when you saw the replay, you just think, we can't take that out of the game. It's a far post cross. It's a midfield player who's big and strong. And there are benefits to being muscular and being strong. And people work at being strong and being muscular. What's the point anymore? You know, because it's not just these two incidents that rub me up the wrong way. It's the fact that we get 30, 40 breaks in every single game, at least, where players just get contact and just stop, just fall over, flop to the ground. And it enough break the game up. It really does. And while I'm not advocating allowing players to come in and go studs high and kick people and knock people over constantly, I really don't want to see the game become a complete non-contact sport where it's stopping. You almost feel like a referee now. He has 90 seconds of play and thinks he has to blow and give something. And players realise that. So, you know, they'll stop in their tracks if someone's touched him on the back or if they go up for a header. The amount of times we see players go up for headers and feign contact with their head. And the referee blows straight away and gives the free kick and it's another stop. There's too many times in a game of football now where the game is stopped. So this isn't just the Trigueros and Messi thing. It's not just Yangel Herrera overpowering Marcus Acuna at the far post. It's the fact that during a game of football, playing time is getting less and less because players know not every 90 seconds there's going to be a foul. It'll be interesting to see the average amount of fouls per game and you work out the average time in between those fouls. And I think we need to stop that. And with VAR, when you look at it in slow motion, perhaps there should be a law that you can't look at it in slow motion because everything looks worse in slow motion. You know, Trigueros hasn't gone in there to hit Messi. He's gone in to win the ball back. He's kept his boot down. And the follow-through, we saw the West Ham players at Balbuena at the weekend, literally kicking the ball and his follow-through catches Chilwell and he gets a red card. There was another incident in that game that was exactly the same, that wasn't even a foul. So I think we have to be careful that whilst we want to protect exciting, attacking, skillful, creative players, we still want this competitive nature as opposed to aggressive, a competitive nature where a player can be good by, you know, getting about the pitch and winning the ball back, you know, and competing. And as I said, players work. I had to work. I had to put pounds on to become muscular, to become someone capable of competing. Players do that now. But what is the point? That's the point I'm trying to make. We want to see that. Supporters love, you know, a good tackle as much as they love a dribble and a cross and a shot. You know, if the player shows that enthusiasm and desire and that passion, supporters, you know, get off their feet in a stadium. And I think we're really bordering now on taking it away and making it a non-contact sport, which I think is to the detriment of the game. I want to see the best players tested in the hardest possible way. You know, we don't want to see in 10 years' time someone the equivalent of Messi, who you're not allowed to touch. So he's skipping around players left, right and centre. And then we're comparing him to Messi and Messi to the Maradona, where, you know, we've got these completely different laws in place now. And the balance has shifted too much one way.
It's already shifted, though, hasn't it? From whenever you do the Maradona-Messi debate, which I don't propose to go into now, you always have to point out that Maradona got kicked to shreds.
Exactly.
Throughout his career. Yes. So just in case anyone complains about this, I'm with you. No one's saying that. No one's saying, let's go back to Marco van Basten having his Achilles kicked every game. But, yeah, but there is a point now. I think it's a VAR thing. I think it's accelerated it to the point where they feel, once you look at a replay enough times, and as you say, in slow motion, you feel obliged to give a contact. You know, in F1, they still have this contact, this concept of a racing incident. So basically, two people go for the same space, they come together, it's no one's fault. And we've almost got rid of that from football now, because they're looking on a VAR. It almost, they're thinking, right, OK, well, he has touched him, I better give the penalty. Or, oh, look, that he's, yeah, his studs, you know, has gone up and he's made
touched
contact.
His feet. You know, when they land on someone's foot when you're going in for a challenge.
Yeah.
And there's some challenges now. I'm seeing the referee giving a foul and I'm thinking, that could have gone either way.
Yeah.
He's just broke the game up. He's just stopped the game. Both players have gone for the ball with the same attitude. The feet are both exactly as high as one another. And then one of the players gets booked and you think, well, that could easily have been a free kick the other way.
Yeah.
You know, it's two players tussling for the ball, getting bumps and bruises and stub marks and kicks and cutting the eyebrows and a broken nose are an occupational hazard of a contact sport, which is football. And we don't want to be, I can imagine in 10, 15 years time, comparing a future player and saying, yeah, but it was different for Messi. He was getting kicked around all over the place. And, you know, with these challenges and flashing up a challenge like Trigueros. But in the future, in 15 years' time, players are running around with literally no contact. And I think that's, I think we're in danger of getting there. And we're in danger of me ranting on another podcast, getting things off my chest. But I just thought that from the weekend, I saw enough incidents, watched enough games where I get sick to death of the game getting stopped every 90 seconds for nothing challenges.
No, Terry, we're all here for your mental health. The whole thing is set up for you to get things off your chest.
That'll be your hours if you want to start on that.
Let's go to the bottom of the league then, shall we? So once again, all sorts of stuff happening at the bottom points.
Yes.
You know, so Getafe, that's just tell you literally what happened. So Huesca 0, Getafe 2, Ensunal, 4 goals in 4 games, not having scored all season before this little run. Valencia 1, Alaves 1. A guy called John Guidetti, Terry, I don't know if you remember.
Yeah, not heard of him before.
First goal in La Liga for 2 years. I know he's been away on loan briefly, well, half a season in that.
Half a season,
Elche beat Levante, the charitable foundation that is Levante, handing out points to needy cases at this stage.
The only team that are doing that at the moment, I think.
Yeah. And Valladolid, what a great run Valladolid are on, Terry. 2 defeats in 8 games. But in that period, they've managed to get themselves into the bottom three because they just don't win enough matches. So they drew with Cadiz, the unbeatable team of, well, I know they lost to Real Madrid, but the team that just somehow defies all kind of explanation of football and keeps getting results. And so there we are once again. The relegation battle just takes more twists.
It does, and it is great to see. And from week to week, it changes. Alaves are the big story down at the bottom with Javier Calleja, with 2 wins, 2 draws in the 4 games. When you think of their record under Abelardo before Calleja comes in, it's an extraordinary turnaround in form, and Guidetti coming off the bench to score again. I look at Elche against Levante. Levante are the one team that are giving up points too easily that seem to have lost their motivation because they're mid-table, they're not a relegation battle, not getting in Europe. Paco Lopez needs to liven them up. Otherwise, he'll be under pressure. And he's had a fantastic run as Levante manager. And I would hate to see it go down the tubes when his team are not giving their all in the last few matches of the season, expect to start again next year. I think they've 1 shot on target. Levante always have attempts on target, always a good attacking team. So Elche 1-0 and Gazzaniga played well You know, despite not too many attempts on goal from Navantes, his performance was excellent. Valladolid absolutely dominated the first half. Just the one goal to show for it. And then you saw the nerves kick in. Yeah. And in the second half, they took a step back. I mean, Valladolid had 62% possession. I bet they have no idea what to do with 62% possession. But it's Cadiz. Everybody has that against Cadiz. I have to say, dreadful defending for the goal. I think it's Luis Perez. It's a corner. It's chipped to the near post. Someone wins it with a flick on, but it's on the edge of the six-yard box. So the ball is going away from goal. And when it's flicked back in towards the far post, Luis Perez is the right back for Valladolid. He's standing in there playing in the six-yard box on the post, playing three players on side. So when that ball is chipped out from the corner and it's gone towards the six-yard box, he should be getting himself out level with that. And then those three players, which eventually led to Carlos scoring. So those little things, you know, do cause you problems. And I have to say, Valladolid playing half decent, can't get wins. They're hard to beat, don't score many goals. But I do fear for them now that if that continues, and they're as wasteful, because we've seen in recent weeks conceding late goal after late goal. This one was 64th minute, so not too bad. They've not really dropped some points. They've dropped lots of opportunities to have got themselves out of trouble. So I think that the Valladolid are struggling severely at the moment. But it chops and changes every week. I've started doing the head-to-heads, John, on the top of the table.
Yeah,
I dread to think what it's going to be like if this is the position with three games to go and we're doing head-to-head. At the bottom, head to heads at the top, head to head for fifth, sixth, and seventh. It's going to be tough going. I've done the head to head. The top, I have got Real Madrid have a head to head over Barca and Atletico.
Yeah.
Atletico have a head to head over Sevilla. And Barca have head to head over Sevilla. Of course, we have Barca Atletico in a couple of weeks. That's going to be a massive week coming up. I think it's 2 weeks' time. So, Atletico, Barca play Atletico at home the same week Real Madrid play Sevilla.
Yeah.
So all four in the same weekend are facing off against each other. So it's not just about the points, it's about the head-to-heads. And likewise, if we go down to the bottom, we could be facing the same issue with going through the head-to-heads and then the mini-tables. Then goal difference, isn't it? So it is, you know, I talked about Levante being the only teams that have knocked off. Valencia were desperate to get their point. That was, you know, against Alaves with the late goal from Gaia. They probably feel there's a little bit of work to be done. Getafe were delighted with their win. That takes them a bit further, nearer towards safety. So it's I think, as I say, Osasuna still trying to get as many points as they can. Celta Vigo want to close the gap on Villarreal and finish as high as they want. It's pleasing to see Celta get the win against Osasuna and celebrating as if they just, put themselves in a Champions League spot. So that motivation is still there for a lot of teams this season. The only one I said is Levante have just knocked off a bit now.
So where's the line? Because we've got Eibar, Real Sociedad tonight, but we've sort of written off Eibar, haven't we? They're 7 points away now from Elche. Yeah. You're in the last safety spot, as it were. There's it's Athletic who play Valladolid this week, isn't it? So big game, isn't it? That's Wednesday night, isn't it? So it's an opportunity for Valladolid. A point would take them out, although you might, I don't know if you've memorised all your head-to-heads yet. I don't know Valladolid versus
not the Elche's bottom, I haven't.
Head-to-head. Because, I mean, it's complicated anyway, isn't it? Because sometimes you go in, the head-to-head makes it very complicated. If there's a possibility of, say, you don't know, for example, Huesca, Valladolid, Elche, Alaves could all finish on the same points come the end of the season, couldn't they? Somewhere around third, what do you think, 30... Because there are 6 pointers to come, so they've got to get some points here. You know, it's easy to say, oh well, they're all rubbish; they won't get many points. But some months there will be. You know, there's points to be gained.
Has proved that four games, 8 points. You imagine that eight points knocked off of Alaves if they hadn't made the change, they'd be in the mire. So Eibar could do it. I don't see it personally. You know, it's not going to be a change of manager, which has happened at Alaves, which has made the, you know, a significant change in how they're playing, you know, their belief, their confidence. I think Getafe are not a million miles away now. And Valencia, I think, are safe anyway. Just need a little bit more work to tidy their season up. So I think it's Alaves, Elche, Valladolid, Huesca, Eibar. Three of those, clearly.
Yeah.
Eibar, Real Sociedad tonight. That's a tough game for Eibar to pick up points, but you know, just needs one, you know, one surprising win can turn around that confidence and belief. Whereas you're going into games now thinking, oh, this is going to be tough. Shoulders are down. You nick a win and suddenly you can't wait for the next game and you get on a roll. And, you know, with Eibar with six games left, they're going to need three or four wins, I think, to get out of it. So I think teams at the bottom are going to be picking up points. I haven't looked at the fixtures of the teams at the bottom.
I think Eibar's the toughest.
Top this week.
Yeah, I think Eibar's are the toughest. So, yeah, I think it's...
There might be games, I assume, where they're all playing each other.
Yeah.
It has to be. They're going to be massive games. So, yeah, thankfully, so much to play for.
So big midweek game. It's a big round of action midweek, isn't it? Because Barcelona play Granada, so that could be the one where they go top of the league, which is huge because they've got a game in hand. It's Atleti 73, Real Madrid 71, Barca 71, Sevilla 70. But Barca have got the game in hand, so if they win that, they'll go top. If they don't win it, they don't go top. It is really, that's how important it is. And of course, Champions League, this stupid old Champions League, Terry, they're still playing that. Real Madrid against Chelsea. Obviously, there's a conspiracy against Real Madrid. Actually, to be fair, that's the journos putting that, because all the questions in the press conference are, do you think there will be conspiring against you? And Zidane, of course, just dead bats everything that is ever asked of him about anything. But the journos are all ready for, you know, it's like commentators egging on referees to send people off. Journos are egging on people to have conspiracy theories now. Don't bet on a 3-3 draw would be my advice. Is that reasonable advice for that game?
Yes. Yeah, I think Chelsea, of course, are going to be guarded, rightly so, and going to Real Madrid. Be interesting to see how Tuchel looks at it, whether he wants to be adventurous, because it's not the best version of Real Madrid at the moment. I doubt it, though. I think they'll be solid, pragmatic, and hope to pinch an away goal. I actually think Zidane will be, you know, doing likewise. He probably hasn't got enough confidence in his team in an attacking sense. If Hazard was fully fit, that might bring a different aspect to their game. He knows the limitations of, say, Benzema, you know, having to perform in every single game. So I think he will keep it tight as well. So I think, you know, we've joked about three out of the last four games have been 0-0 draws. I wouldn't be surprised if this is another one.
Yeah. Yeah. Neither manager will be gutted. That's the problem, isn't it? You know, they both look at that and think, okay, fair enough. We'll take it to the next leg.
Yeah.
Right. Well, we will be back for the Patreons. If you want to join in, please do, because it keeps us in business, basically. So it's patreon.com and it's /LTEL. And we'll be reviewing the midweek action with the Patreons. We'll be doing stuff throughout the summer as well. So, yes.
You've got Villarreal Arsenal as well, haven't we?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah,
Thursday in the Europa League.
Yeah.
That'd be a good one to look forward to as well. The 6 o'clock Barca Granada on Thursday evening, followed by Villarreal Arsenal. So plenty of football to watch this week as well. But the big, of course, the big game, as you said, Thursday, Barcelona, Granada for La Liga. The European stuff as well. I'm sure we'll catch up on that for our patrons.
Yes, right. Enjoy your football this week, everybody. Terry, I hope you're 100% again soon, and we'll be back podcasting again next week.